made it sound like, oh, in a couple of weeks we'll be up and running again. We're going to build our systems back. We're going to do X, Y, Z. That hasn't happened.
Hello. Welcome to the Better Outcomes Show, where we explore the possibilities of a new healthcare. Each episode, we bring you a conversation with leaders across the healthcare industry, exploring topics ranging from new treatment techniques and interventions to novel service delivery methods and business models. And now your host, Rafi Salazar from Rehab U Practice Solutions, a leader in patient engagement and retention strategy. Let's explore the possibilities of a new healthcare.
Well, hello again. Welcome to another episode of the Better Outcomes Show. I'm your host, Rafi Salazar with Rehab U Practice Solutions. And if you are looking to try to find a way to drive sales, maybe it's get more leads in the door, maybe it's get people reaching out with inquiries, and you're having a hard time gaining traction, well, I would suggest you focus on your positioning. Basically, what I want you to do is be able to develop an effective value proposition, and I can help you do that through the Healthcare Positioning Alignment Workshop. What we do is we help you answer the question, value to whom? Obviously, healthcare is very complex, especially here in the United States. You've got four different stakeholders, and each of those stakeholders view things through a different lens, what they determine valuable, the features that they want, the benefits that they're seeking. All of that changes depending on where they are within the context of healthcare. So by narrowing down that value to whom question, you have a clearer idea of how your technology, your device, your software, your solution, or even your healthcare service is better positioned to solve the problems faced by those specific healthcare stakeholders. Now, again, you can figure out how to do it on your own. You can try to, you know, muscle through, add this here, try this there, see if that works. And if that works for you, great. If not, if you want some help, if you want some guidance, check out the Healthcare Positioning Alignment Workshop. We've done this for tons of clients over the past couple years. And basically what we do is we help put the foundation upon which all of your marketing and your business development strategies and activities will rest. So you start with a solid value proposition or a solid positioning, and then everything builds from there. If you want to learn more about that, head on over to positioning.rehabupracticesolutions.com. That's positioning.rehabupracticesolutions.com. Alrighty. This week, another solo episode here, I'm going to take some time specifically to talk about maybe call it cash flow management, call it revenue cycle management. I don't know if we really want to even put it under that label, but business resiliency is what we'll call it, I guess. That's what I'm going to title this episode, business resiliency, building a resilient business. And the reason this came about is really because obviously Change Healthcare, at the time of this recording, we're now, what, 6 or 8 weeks into an issue, 6 weeks? It's about middle of April right now. Change Healthcare, one of the biggest clearinghouses and claims processors in the United States, underwent a cybersecurity incident, an attack, if you would. And I think like 4 terabytes of information and data was stolen. Claims were stopped for all of Change Healthcare's operations, and Change at the time, or maybe at their height, were processing somewhere in the neighborhood of over 50% of all of the healthcare claims in the United States. So obviously this is a huge deal, and has been a huge deal for many providers across the country. Well, the other day, when I was holding my baby, reading some articles in the late evening, I think it was Sunday night or something like that, I read that, you know, this is 5 or 6 weeks later now, that Change Healthcare was apparently hit with another extortion request for the same data. So they paid, I don't know, $22, $28 million or something like that to one cyber terrorist, cyber criminal, whatever you want to call it, some organization. They, I guess, decided that wasn't enough, and now they're getting hit with another extortion request. So now what, you know, at the very beginning of this whole thing, Change made it sound like, oh, in a couple weeks we'll be up and running again. We're going to build our systems back. We're going to do X, Y, Z. That hasn't happened. So I know for a fact, and a lot of people that are not in healthcare might not know, that healthcare is a very cash flow dependent business, especially on the provider side. You know, once the money turns off, once the claims are not getting processed in a regular and timely fashion, many providers simply don't have the funds or the cash on hand to continue operating. So this is especially true in private healthcare practice. So my world, I'm a private practice owner myself, physical occupational therapy clinic. I've worked with, in the past, a lot of privately held PT and OT clinics, small healthcare systems, small hospital systems. And even now that I work with healthcare technology and innovative practices in the U.S., a lot of those businesses are still cash flow dependent. So while larger healthcare organizations, maybe like large corporates that own, you know, 20 or 30 different hospitals or something like that, they have big healthcare systems, big hospital systems, maybe they have economies of scale that can help them cut some costs and you know, make their reserves last a little longer. Many private healthcare practices don't have that option. Many small technology startups don't have that option. They don't have a bunch of reserves that they can just lie back on in the event of something catastrophic happening to their revenue. So what I'm going to talk about is just five points, that I've kind of come up with in thinking about this and looking at what is making and what is helping some businesses thrive or at least survive while others are folding up and going out of business. What I've said to a few people, what I've witnessed in some conversations with folks that are impacted by this, is that there will be and there are private healthcare practices that are going out of business as a result of the Change Healthcare cyber attacks. Now, they were running good businesses, they were profitable businesses, but they, you know, the money got turned off and they're going to have to go out of business. So again, it kind of speaks to maybe some of the risk that we take as business owners and entrepreneurs and starting a business and taking on that risk is that there are sometimes things that are completely out of your control, that you could be running a very solid business and it still gets ripped away, if you would, because of just, you know, a cyber attack or something similar. So I'm going to lay out these 5 points and then I'm going to kind of dive into them in a little bit more depth. So I'm just gonna name all 5 of them. So the first one, and I talk about this a lot with all of my clients, is that it's important to understand the choke points in your clinic or your organization's cash flow and then understand how to mitigate them. So understand the choke points. Number 2, you can't only be profitable, but it is also necessary to be disciplined and to build up, call it a war chest, call it cash reserves, call it operation reserves. You need to have those on hand to float operations through the unexpected, whether it be a cybersecurity attack, whether it be something like your main salesperson leaving or your business development person leaving. You need to have some sort of cash in the bank that you can float operations until you can normalize and stabilize income again. The third one. So first one, understand the choke points. 2, make sure you've got a war chest. 3, or rainy day fund. 3, waiting gets you killed. There's no time to act like a deer in the headlights. You just can't do it, especially when something big like this happens. I know a lot of healthcare providers that just sat back and waited for Change to quote unquote sort things out, for Change Healthcare to turn their systems back on. And then 1 week stretched into 2 weeks, stretched into 3 weeks, stretched into 4 weeks. And now they're a month behind on their claims. And there was, at least at the time, no light at the end of the tunnel. Change kept pushing back the goalposts on when claims were going to be processed. And sure, there were some bridge loans that Change Healthcare was putting out there, that Optum was putting out there, if you were affected, but all that money had to be paid back eventually. And what was going to end up happening, and what is probably going to end up happening, is a lot of providers took that money, and the money that they're going to get back is going to trickle in so slowly that they're just not going to be able to keep up. They're just going to take up a bunch of unnecessary indebtedness, if you would. So waiting gets you killed. The clients and the people that I've talked with that have survived and that have kind of done all right through this either were not involved with Change Healthcare, so they don't count, or they pivoted very quickly and began switching a lot of their EDI enrollments. So waiting gets you killed. 4, having a diversified income stream. Now, whether that is private pay, whether that's non-covered services, whether that's like alternative revenue models, or whether it's having a balance load. We had, I spoke with Paul Singh from Strata, and I can't remember if he mentioned this in the podcast episode that we did with him last week or whether this has just come up in conversations with him over time, but he considers having a load balanced approach to like EDI enrollment and the like, because if something happens to one of the clearinghouses, you've got another one in backup that at least some of the claims are going through, and then you can either pivot or change or whatever, and you're not totally cut off. So again, I'll dive into that in a little bit. And then the fifth one is you need to be able to have those money conversations with everyone, providers, payers, patients, whether it's explaining why like equipment purchases are on hold, talking with patients about balances and deductibles that are due, or clients and customers and saying, listen, we're not in a position to finance this purchase for you for the next, you know, 30, 60, 90 days, whatever it is, whatever the terms are. Maybe there's some kind of onerous terms for a contract or something. Like, we can't do that because we're a small business. And you can always lean back on that. Like, this is a small business. It's not a big corporate entity. You know, we need the money so we can pay Bob or Sarah or Jim or whoever it is so that they can feed their family later. We can't sit back and float it for 30 days. So let's dive into each of those. I think the most important one, at least in my mind, is understanding the possible choke points. I always think about it as like, think about all the ways you could get killed or you could go out of business. And not that you need to be super, you don't need to turn into a doomsday prepper about it with your business, but you do need to have maybe a vigilant awareness of the possible threats that are out there and what you can do to mitigate them. So for example, if you understand that, you know, you've got one clearinghouse relationship and most of your claims are going through that, you need to understand, okay, if that clearinghouse gets affected, like Change Healthcare did back in February, what is that going to do to my cash flow? And how can I mitigate either that chokehold, either that choke point, or how can I build in systems that prevent that from being such a stranglehold if it gets compromised? Now, hopefully, we never see another issue like this again, where an entire clearinghouse just has to shut down operations and people and practices just lose the ability to fund the, you know, to submit claims and receive reimbursement. But I always like to hope for the best, plan for the worst. When it comes to understanding choke points in your business's cash flow, you need to understand them, and then you need to build systems that make it kind of mitigate those problems. So for example, if it's sales, you know, if you're running a device company or an innovation, a SaaS company or a software company or something like that, and your choke point is that you've got to funnel everybody through to like a specific onboarding sequence in order for money to get in the door, well, then you need to start building a system that can scale that sequence so that you're not funneling people through to like one person's calendar or something like that. That'd be a good example of seeing the choke point and then understanding how to do it. The second point is that you can't just be profitable. Profitability is good. Obviously, it's necessary, but it's not enough. You need to do something intentional with those profits. Now, I'm a big fan of the book. I'm trying to look at who the author is now. It's on my shelf. It's called Profit First. Michael, I want to say it's Michalowicz or something like that. Profit First is the name of the book. Anyways, he talks about in his businesses, he talks about taking a percentage of the profits and dropping them into like a reserve fund so that over time you've got like 6, 8 months worth of operating expenses in the bank so that if anything happens, you know, you lose a major supplier, you lose a big contract, your claims get turned off, whatever it is, you have money in the bank that can float you through that unexpected time. Now, this is very, very difficult, especially in private practice where margins can sometimes be razor thin. It's still one of those things that we need to be disciplined and do it. Now, I'm not going to say that it's easy. In fact, in my own practice, I think we have like, we're building up and we were at like 2 or 3 months worth of operating expenses. That has since been obviously eaten away because we were affected by the Change Healthcare cyber attack. Now, we kind of mitigated that because, as point three tells you, waiting gets you killed. We pivoted very quickly. So some of our claims got turned on a lot quicker than some of our peers. But what we have done and what works for me, and maybe this will work for you, maybe it won't, is at the end of every quarter, so I drop a percentage of the top line revenue into like a profit fund, and I basically follow the profit first kind of roadmap or the framework that he uses with the separate accounts, and you're making transfers. At the end of every quarter, I'm taking half of the money that is in that profit reserve and I'm dumping it into a high yield savings account that we have for the business. So at the time of this recording, it's middle of April 2024. I think that the interest rate on there is like clipping right around 4.9%. So not, you know, it's not huge amounts of return, but at least the money's sitting somewhere and it's getting some kind of interest gain for being there. And it's liquid and it's easily accessible so that if anything happens, I can just make a transfer, cover whatever needs to be covered. And again, right now it's every quarter I'm taking half of that money and shifting it over. I think at this point, because of what's going on and now that we're building back after the change and the money's been turned on and we've been getting some really, really big payments recently, I'm just trying to stock up a lot. So like every week I'm making transfers back into that just to pad that account again. And then my ultimate goal is going to be 6 months like of top line revenue, not even 6 months of expenses, but 6 months of top line revenue so that if something happens, we'll be in a position to wait it out really comfortably, because money has always been one of those things. And this is, again, as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, that money conversations, dealing with money is something you need to tackle on a personal and a professional level. Money has always been one of those things for me that is something that I am trying to manage well. Even when I was not self-employed, when I was not a business owner, I had 6 months worth of living expenses in a bank account because that made me sleep well at night. And as a business owner, as a founder, a partner even in either a healthcare practice or a startup, you need to be able to have enough personal reserves and business reserves to help you sleep well at night. And that number is going to be different for different people. My personal threshold is like, I always advise people at least 3 months. But I know some people that have like a year's worth of expenses lined up and put away because it makes them sleep well at night. And you got to do what is best for you and your personal situation. However, when it comes to the business, it is very important that you have a reserve fund that has the necessary funds to float you for what, in my mind, you would see as the biggest or the worst case scenario. So for me, the worst case scenario is looking at about 6 months now, just given, and it might be even be longer with some of the Change Healthcare debacle as they try to untangle that 4 terabytes of data and build their systems back. I was talking to somebody the other day who's in cybersecurity, and they were saying, oh, it's going to be 12 to 18 months before Change Healthcare is like operating normally again. Now, sure, bits and pieces are going to be operating. You'll get some claims getting processed and authorizations getting processed and things like that. But you know, for me, it's going to be 6 months. That's my goal going into the latter part of 2024 is I'm just going to build up as much as I can. But over the next 12 months, my goal is to build up a good cash pile for that. Okay. Number three, waiting gets you killed. Again, in times of crisis, I think I hate to say there's two kinds of people in the world, but there's definitely two different mentalities. And one of those mentalities is everything will go back to normal soon. I just have to keep on riding out what I'm doing. And, you know, either the money will come back on or things will get turned back on, or it can't happen here, right? And the other mentality is like the total opposite. No one is coming to save you. You're on your own. So you've got to take an action and you've got to make a decision now. And I kind of sit on that latter part. And the reason for that is because I understand the game. I understand that I'm not a large healthcare corporate. You know, I don't have multi-millions or billions of dollars to throw at lobbying efforts or advocacy up in Congress. I know that when it comes down to it, I am a small player in the greater piece of healthcare, speaking specifically about the clinic that I own and operate. Like, we're small players. Help doesn't generally come for the small players. You know, the government is concerned about keeping access open. And for them, that means big hospitals, emergency rooms, people that need critical care, they're going to get the funding, or they're going to get at least more consideration than the private healthcare practice owners, right? So in my mind, that means I am on my own when it comes to anything going wrong in the business, even if it's a national issue like this Change cybersecurity cyber attack. No one is coming to save me. I've got to do what I need to do to protect my business, my team, my patients. So that means that when it came time, like when that attack happened and claims got turned off, and we realized it pretty quickly, like within a few days, we began pivoting enrollment very quickly to a different clearinghouse. And because some of those clearinghouses take, like Medicare, I think takes 14 or 20 days in order to change EDI enrollments. And Medicare, especially in like the physical occupational therapy world, can be a big payer, a big chunk of the payers or the payments that you receive from Medicare payments. So we shifted very quickly. Like that week, I was signing paperwork and changing to move into a different EDI relationship. And we were kind of already in the middle of changing, and it just happened. We got lucky too. We were considering changing. We had started changing over because the billing service that we used was on a different clearinghouse. So some of our stuff had been changed already, and there was just some stuff that we kind of just let, you know, why poke a sleeping bear type thing. It was working. We were going to keep it. So we ended up shifting the rest over. There are some practices that I know of that I've talked to their owners that still are on Change Healthcare, and they're like dropping paper claims in the mail. They're hoping Medicare will process those paper claims or claims directly to Medicare. We tried that early on, and they, at least in our MAC, denied it. So we just had to wait. But again, waiting gets you killed. There's no time to sit and just act like a deer in the headlights. Again, I think I've heard this a couple different situations, either on the self-defense side or the Jocko podcast. He talks about like decide, move, and act, or something like that. Like, or look around, decide, and act. Like, that's kind of what you need to do as a business owner, especially in small, nimble companies, healthcare startups, device companies, you know, small private practices and the like. If something goes wrong, you need to make a decision, and you need to make a decision kind of before the day is over so that you can begin pivoting, because sometimes your business will depend on it. Okay, so we've talked about the first three. The fourth one, have diversified income. Now, I look at this in a couple different ways. So I look at it, one, as the types of services you're providing or the ways you're getting paid. And then two is that, going back to that choke point issue. So the first one, I know some private practices that have the majority, or maybe it's 50-50, of their practice is either private pay, non-covered services, and then insurance-based reimbursements. Those companies were, you know, obviously losing 50% of your income is a big deal, but it's not as big a deal as losing 100% of your income. So thinking about what you can do to diversify the types of services that you offer, meaning the types of payers you're accepting money from, like you're shifting it from the maybe Medicare to the patient themselves. We did this a bit in the practice. We do dry needling. We offer dry needling packages. We offer self-pay packages and the like. When this thing happened and we were losing out on some of that, our claims not being processed, we began really pushing, marketing, discussing with patients those non-covered services. We even reached out to old patients with some of those non-covered offerings, those cash pay offerings, and that helped bring some money in the door that helped us, you know, make payroll, quite frankly, without having to dip into those reserves quite as much. The other piece, let me go back to that. So there's that, actually delivering the services, and then there's other ways you can monetize your expertise. So I know Anthony Maritato has been on the show before. He's talking about it all the time on LinkedIn and on Facebook about how a third, I think, of his clinic revenue comes from like YouTube or something like that. So think about other ways that you can bring in money based off of the skill set that you already have. And then going forward, that just becomes another you know, another leg in your stool, if you would, of your business. So this isn't something that you diversify your income stream in the middle of a crisis, and then when the crisis goes back, you know, gets resolved, you go back to business as usual. No, like you've added another stream of income. Let's grow it. Let's build it. Let's develop it so that you have a more resilient business in the long term. In line with that, especially those practices, those healthcare practices that are involved in different payer relationships, and maybe EDI is funny. One of the things that we did was most of the workman's comp companies that we are in network with, we don't submit claims through like EDI or Change or a clearinghouse. Those go directly via fax in a lot of cases or an online portal to those payers, and then they pay us. So what we did, what I instructed my team to do, was when we knew that Change Healthcare got, everything got turned off, the claims that were flowing through there got stopped. While that was figuring it out, not only we made a decision very quickly, we started changing EDI enrollments. In the interim, I told my team, I said, reach out to all of those workman's comp companies, and what we're going to do is we're going to work our accounts receivable from them. So any money that they owe us, any outstanding claims, let's try to drive as much of that. Like, I want our AR from these non-EDI claims areas to be virtually zero by the end of this, because we're going to be working it at a good clip, which was great, because we found issues where, stuff happened here and there, and this company owes you, a couple $1,000, and it's been a couple months, but your people are in the middle of handling 8 or 9 different things, so it just gets missed or gets backburned, whatever it is. And we brought in a ton of money doing that, basically reaching out by hyper-focusing where we were focusing our collections. So understanding, again, if you understand the choke point, you can understand how to mitigate it. That kind of flowed from that. I took a look at what was going on and said, hey, these 5 payers, we don't do EDI with. These claims are submitted directly to them. Let's reach out to them and work their AR as much as we can. And we were able to drive a good bit of money. Now, it still hurt. I'm looking at the financials here for the business, and we had at the end of the day, it was like a 30% drop in income between February and March. And now in April, we're back up to, we'll probably be back at normal, if not more, because all of these delayed claims are going to begin getting processed here in a little bit. I think we just had like a $6,000 Medicare check get deposited today, which is wonderful. I love big checks. So it was really just the tail end of February and March that really hit our income. And what we ended up doing, if I look back at, I'm going to look back here through some of the remit days on the dashboard for March. And yeah, it's like, that you could see the money coming in pretty steady, and then it drops to like a couple $100 a day. And that's, as a practice owner, that's when you're like, ooh, what's going on? But then there's some big bumps. And I look at those big bumps, and they are checks and deposits from some of those workman's comp companies that we were working for the AR. So while we experienced a 30%, 35%, give or take, decline in revenue over those 30, 40 days, it would have been much worse if we hadn't reached out to those and worked the hyper-specific AR work, if you would. And then the last piece. So we talked about understanding the choke points, the need for reserves, waiting gets you killed, understanding how you can diversify income or diversifying your income stream, and then, hyper-focusing maybe your AR and collections work. The final one is the ability to have those money conversations with everyone, the providers, the patients, the payers, insurance companies even. And that's what we did, going back to number 4, when our team began hyper-focusing on these workman's comp companies, is I just had the team tell them exactly what was going on. Like, listen, our billing has really been impacted by the cybersecurity attack at Change Healthcare. So we're going to be in contact with you a lot as we begin working specifically your account and several other accounts that we have, that we know we have outstanding payments for. And most of those workman's comp companies, they understood it. Our provider relations person and the billing people that we were talking to understood it. And they've been very, very helpful in kind of expediting that. Because on their end too, like, it doesn't do them any good to have outstanding money that they owe a provider. So it's a win-win in that regards. But then at the same time, we had to have those conversations, those money conversations with patients that were coming in the door. And we had to tell them, listen, we've been impacted in a big way by the cybersecurity incident. I know normally we're 100, like my goal is like 100% of the money that is owed is due at the time of service. Like we try to collect everything up front. There's always those patients though that kind of slip through the cracks or something happens, or maybe they saw PT and OT on one day. So they had two copays, but they only paid one because they, you know, whatever, it was just some miscommunication or something like that. So we began reaching out to all the patients that, you know, either past patients that still owed us money that had balances on the books, or patients that were coming in that were maybe trying or asking about payment options and stuff like that. And we were, it wasn't like one of those, no, if you don't pay, you're not getting seen. But we did have the conversation with them, like, listen, you know, maybe in different times we could extend this payment plan out a little bit, but we're not in a position to do that because of XYZ. And most people understood that. I mean, they understand that, as Paul Singh mentioned, again, I'm going to talk about him, as he mentioned in the last week's episode, like, healthcare is one of the few industries where it seems to be okay to receive a service, to receive a benefit, and not pay up front. If I walk into Chick-fil-A to get a sandwich, they're not giving me a chicken sandwich without me paying the money. So we have those conversations, and I've tried to build a culture in the clinic of having those conversations with everybody all the time. We just kind of redoubled our effort with that. And then again, with the team, obviously, I'm not in the clinic. I think you've probably heard this a little bit. I'm not in the clinic every single day as a treating clinician. A lot of my time is spent with clients on the consulting side, doing things like the healthcare positioning alignment workshop, hint, hint, or just the administrative stuff for the business, you know, running payroll or looking over the P&Ls, or maybe it's signing agreements or having meetings with potential referral sources or partners in the space. Like, I'm doing some of that stuff. So I'm not in there every day, like in boots on the ground treating patients, but I am, my office is in the clinic, so I'm here. And I'm just very, the way I am is pretty open about stuff going on. So not, you want to do this very tactfully. You don't want to tell people like the ships are burning and we're going down, because that's going to instill fear and trepidation in your team members. But I was very upfront with them and said, hey guys, listen, here's the deal. You probably don't know this. None of my clinicians knew anything about the change. None of them knew what Change Healthcare was, and then none of them knew that there was a cyber attack on it. So I said, listen, here's the deal. This is what's going on. Bringing you up to speed. I'm not super concerned about it. We have reserves to make it through for the next little bit. But what I am going to do is, we're not buying things, equipment, supplies, or anything that's not necessary to do our work. So none of those nice to haves, we're going to have need to haves. And being upfront with the team about that was very, you know, in my mind, it was beneficial, because they kind of understood where we were at. They understood that if they were putting in a request for something and I said no, it wasn't because I was saying no just to say no, or because I was being greedy or whatever. It's because there was this big issue. And then being open and honest with how things are going with it. So, you know, at regular staff meetings or whatever, I'm telling them, okay, this is where we're at. You know, EDI got changed over. We should be seeing some. And maybe they don't need to know the exact numbers. They don't need to know any of that. But they need to know that there was an issue, that you're handling it, that you're taking care of them. But then they also understand kind of what's going on in the background. So, you know, like, part of that can be like, so if I'm not in the clinic as much anymore, you see me kind of jumping from call to call or doing a bunch of other stuff, it's because we're kind of managing this. And then you're, again, managing expectations with your team. I did a whole episode on that when it came to hiring and firing and all that. Managing expectations, that carries through the employment relationship as well, through the team member relationship. So anyways, having crucial conversations. You could probably do an entire podcast on that. So just wrapping up, the 5 points again to run a resilient, this doesn't even need to be a resilient healthcare business, just a resilient business in general, is understand the choke points and how to mitigate them. Not only, you know, become profitable, but then put necessary reserves away for those rainy days. I think Jim Rohn is famous for saying something like, you know why we we harvest in the fall because we know that winter's coming, right? Like, it's not a surprise. The winter always follows the fall. The rain always happens. There's always going to be something. And yeah, it can be cyclical, and it might be hard to predict when it's happening, but we know that the only thing that is certain is that there are going to be good times, and usually those are followed by bad times. Or, you know, a bad time sneaks into some of the good times, and you need to have the resources on hand to weather those storms. Okay. So not only be profitable, have the cash reserves. Waiting gets you killed. So when in times of crisis, you act, and then you kind of, my team makes fun of me for saying this, it's an iterative approach. We're building the plane as we're flying it a lot of times. Sometimes you make a decision. Maybe it's a small decision. You start moving down that path and then realizing, oh, we got to shift this way or shift that way. But you're always making decisions and moving. You're never waiting, quote unquote, to see how it plays out, because waiting gets you killed. At least that's the way I see it. Having diversified income stream helps. And then once you've built those diversified income streams, let's work on building, developing, and growing them so that in the event that one of those legs of your stool, so to speak, gets chopped out from under you, you've got some more stability. And then the last one is you need to be able to have those difficult conversations, those money conversations, those value conversations with all the stakeholders involved so that everything moves smoothly for you. So hopefully that is somewhat helpful to you. I know a lot of times, especially with episodes like this, I feel like sometimes I'm just kind of talking about kind of what's going on through my mind and some of the stuff that I've been going through in either in one of the businesses that I'm running or, you know, conversations with clients or something like that. This one I feel like is just kind of timely given what's going on with the Change healthcare incident. And it is something that I've been thinking about a little bit in my own time. I've been thinking about shoring up some of these points for us in the clinical business. And this Change healthcare was kind of like the thing that kind of pushed us into doing some of those things, which is wonderful. And hopefully, again, you've got something you can take and use with you in your own business. If you found the episode interesting, helpful, insightful, maybe even a little entertaining, I don't know. Shoot me a note, info@rehabupracticesolutions.com. Tell me what you liked about it. I'd love to hear from you. If you like the show, you can head on over to iTunes, leave us a rating or review, or just share the episodes. Doesn't need to be this one. Just an episode with somebody that you think would find it valuable. Because that's how we spread the show. We spread the message. We're all about humanizing healthcare. So to wrap this around, if you don't run a profitable, resilient business, you're not going to be around to humanize healthcare for very long. You'll be out of business. So while we like to think a lot of times about the patient care side of things and how this is affecting patients, if you can't keep the lights on, you don't see very many patients. So this is one of those things where I think it's our responsibility as business owners to make sure that we're running resilient businesses so that we can continue to stand in the community and be those organizations that are able to, one, have those difficult conversations, those crucial conversations with patients, that are able to facilitate things on their behalf. Or if you're a provider, a technology provider, solution provider that's helping some of these clinics, you need to be able to empower them to do that for their patients. So it all starts with having your own ship in order, if you would. You know, reef those sails or whatever. I'm not a sailor, so I don't, that's probably not a good analogy. All right. Last thing that I'll plug before letting you go here. If you want to get the book, Better Outcomes, A Guide to Humanizing Healthcare, you can find that at book.betteroutcomes.show. I share in that book the 8 commitments that healthcare organizations can make in order to humanize the healthcare experience. If you want to, you know, subscribe to the show, get notified when we drop new episodes and all that, you can do that at www.betteroutcomes.show. Until the next time, folks, be safe, be healthy. I will talk with you then.
Thanks for listening to the Better Outcomes Show, where we explore the possibilities of a new healthcare. Our hope is that you walk away from each episode informed, equipped, and empowered to push the boundaries in your own practice or business. We want to give you the tools to help you build strong, long-lasting relationships with your patients and clients, helping meet their goals, improve their health, and achieve better outcomes. Learn more at www.rehabupracticesolutions.com. We'll catch you on the next episode.